From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm the man they call the Bill of Right, Bill Curtis. And here's your host at the Filene Center at Wolf Trap in Vienna, Virginia, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Great to be here at this beautiful place. Later on, we're going to be talking with the Surgeon General of these United States, Dr. Vivek Murthy. Now, we are going to pretend to be interested in his job and stuff, but all we really want is that he gives us our very own Surgeon General's warning. Something like this.
Public radio may cause extreme drowsiness. Before listening to public radio, make sure your doctor says you're healthy enough to have sex. Not that it will matter.
We ask you to defy the risks and give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. I'm Dave Kerbo from Sunnyvale, California.
Hey, beautiful Sunnyvale. That's in Silicon Valley, is it? Is it not?
It is.
It is. And are you some sort of young millionaire?
I'm a geek, like most people here.
Yeah.
I'm a special kind of geek. I'm a user experience designer.
A user experience designer. That's the person who actually cares about people like us.
Well, yes. I try to help people.
Smarter people than us.
Apps that are easy to use rather than, you know, most of them.
Well, welcome to the show, David. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, it's a features writer for the Washington Post. It's Roxanne Roberts.
Hello.
You guys are having fun here.
We are having fun.
Next, it's a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Mr. Adam Felber.
Hi, Dave.
And finally, it's a comedian you can catch at Humphrey's Concerts by the Bay in San Diego, California on September 11th. It's Paula Poundstone.
Hey, Dave.
David, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Bill this time. Bill Curtis right now is going to start us off with three colorful quotations from the week's news. Your job, of course, identify or explain two of them if you can. If you do that, you'll win our prize. The voice of scorekeeper emeritus Carl Castle. On your voicemail. Are you ready to do this?
I'm excited. Let's do this.
Here is your first quote.
I know I'm better than anybody.
That humble statement was offered by somebody who, astoundingly enough, still leads the polls for the GOP nomination.
That would be the Donald.
Yes, Donald Trump. According to the latest polls, Donald Trump still the leading candidate for the Republican presidential nomination, despite doing more than the rest of the Republican field combined to destroy the candidacy of Donald Trump. Just to catch you up, this week he said John McCain isn't really a war hero, quote, I like people that weren't captured, unquote. And then he called Lindsey Graham a lightweight and gave out Graham's personal phone number.
Oh, I forgot about that.
All right, that one was actually kind of fun because we got to watch Graham constantly answering his phone and saying, yes, my refrigerator is running. Why are you people obsessed with my refrigerator?
It's astounding to me. I no longer believe in the reality I used to believe in. Because, like, Donald Trump imagined he would announce his candidacy for president and immediately go to the top of the polls, and that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard.
Right.
But it has happened. So we're not living in what we thought we were. This is like some kind of Trump matrix.
We're living in that.
Yeah. Yeah, like Lawrence Fishburne is going to come out any moment and let us know that the world is not what we thought it was.
I know. It's like, we took the wrong pill, Adam.
How are these polls done?
Well, what they're done, this is a good question.
They call Trump Tower.
No, Donald Trump himself has bought up all the phone numbers. So when the answer goes, no, I love Donald Trump.
I think he's the finest, bestest, most luxurious, high-quality, first-class candidate I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
They're done by professional polling firms. They call hundreds.
And by the way, I'm Hispanic.
You didn't mention that he wants to build the wall between the border.
Oh, there's so much to mention. We could do
and
the whole hour on
and he wants Mexico
that.
To pay. He's wants convinced Mexico will pay for it.
Right.
Okay.
Well, we're definitely going to need them to build it.
Well.
Wait, I apologize. I interrupted, which is so not like me. But I just think, don't you think that maybe they're asking people too early and people are just irked and so they just say? I mean, it can't possibly be that people really think, well, there's a good idea. It just can't be.
Well, this is true, Paula, that...
Because I like my fellow man, but this is putting me off.
Pursuing... Yeah.
And Candy's polls correct for sarcasm.
That's true, yeah.
Oh, Donald Trump's my choice for president.
Yeah, I know. All right, very good, David. Here is your next quote.
Welcome home, President Obama.
Now, that was a sign that President Obama hoped the locals would take down before he arrived where at the end of this week?
He's in Africa, Kenya.
That's exactly right, David. Kenya. In the second half of his second term, President Obama, he started the Make the Conspiracy Theorists Head Explode tour with state visits to his ancestral birthplace, Kenya, his mosque in Afghanistan, and the secret facility where he's researching ways to breed an army of Beyoncés to seize the guns of Texans. Now, he was talking about the trip with the press, and he said he was looking forward to going back to Kenya. He's been there before, but he thought it wouldn't be as much fun as when he went as a private citizen. Right, because it's so annoying when you have a whole plane all to yourself with a bedroom.
Yeah.
He just can't wait to get his first post-presidency trip in coach. Joe, Michelle, can you guys get up? I got to use that little bathroom they have in the back. Isn't this fun?
So they said welcome home?
Yeah, they had signs saying welcome home.
Oh, well, I think they meant it in more of a global way.
Yeah, they descend from a Kenyan.
They're proud of him, yeah.
Where does Biden go to get a welcome home sign? Where does he go? What's his ancestral?
He goes to a Chuck E. Cheese in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
How you doing? Hey, tell you back.
Your skee ball record still stands, they say. All right, very good, David. Here is your last quote.
Look over there, said my sister Kay. We can go home with a rabbit today.
That is a line from a new book that, somewhat to everybody's surprise, we got from a beloved children's author. What author?
Dr. Seuss.
That's right. Turns out, contrary to what you've heard, the publishing industry is not dead, just the authors are. For the second week in a row, the big hit book is by a writer who hasn't written a book in decades. It's a great lesson for struggling new authors. The keys to success, write every day, write what you know, and if you can, die. The new book by Dr. Seuss was written before his other famous books, back when he was still just pre-med Seuss. It's called What Pet Should I Get? If this is successful, we can expect future undiscovered Seuss works that he left in his files, unpublished, when he died, stuff maybe he did late in life, like What Medication Should I Take Today? And If I Ran My Own Estate.
Oh, the places you'll go to pee because you can't wait.
Yes.
I'm really torn about this because I always feel like if they didn't get published, there's probably a reason they didn't get published.
Yeah. You know? I mean, first is Harper Lee's book, which he didn't want published and has now been published, and now Dr. Seuss. If this trend continues, we might see new releases of mediocre books that authors put aside in their day, like George Orwell's 1983, Slaughterhouse-4, F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Meh Gatsby. And, of course, The Da Vinci Code. Bill, how did David do in our quiz?
David did perfect.
David, thank you so much for playing.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, David.
We want to remind everyone they can join us most weeks back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, go over to WBEZ.org, and you can find a link at our very own website, which, of course, is waitwait.npr.org. Panel, it is time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Paula, New York's JFK Airport is getting a new $48 million luxury terminal just for whom?
Oh, just for one person?
Well, not one person, one kind of passenger.
One kind of passenger? for pets, for animals.
Either that's the answer or they've gone feral. Yeah. Yes, it is the answer. Animals, Paul.
That was the,
animals.
The trapped wolves. Wow.
If you thought LaGuardia smelled like old cats and urine, wait till you get a load of the Ark at JFK once it's finished. At the Ark, as it will be called, cats will get luxury lounges, horses will get air-conditioned stalls, dogs, this is true, get a bone-shaped pool, and flat-screen televisions, all presumably turned to the 24-hour Squirrel Channel.
Squirrel! 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 This...
I love this show! Squirrel!
My favorite show! Wait, now what's my favorite show?
Is this in the terminal or
no,
on the
this
airplane?
No, this is, they're building a whole new terminal.
Yeah, because
just
there's
for
so
animals.
Much room at JFK.
Yeah. The Ark, as it will be called, will have a special place for penguins to mate. Seriously.
Wait, I don't even get one of those at the airport.
I know!
Well, I don't think you should be having sex with penguins. I... feel very strongly about that.
And I feel like you're just trying to suppress my identity right there.
No, after what happened with the flamingos, I feel...
That was consensual.
Whoa, if I could talk to the animals, just imagine if chatting with a kitchen chimpanzee.
Hey, it's Peter. So Gene Weingarten at the Washington Post likes to collect what he calls aptonyms, which is people whose name fits their profession brilliantly. And one of the best ever is Mr. Tito Beverage. That's his name. Tito Beverage. He makes Tito's Handmade Vodka, which is a sponsor of this very podcast. They incorporate the concept of artisan craftsmanship found in boutique wineries into the spirits industry. And they make Tito's Handmade Vodka. Tito Beverage. Did I mention that? His name is Beverage and he makes vodka. He still uses the time-honored pot still batch distillation process. I don't know what that is, but it sounds very legitimate. And it's all in Austin, Texas. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from corn and is naturally gluten-free. So, party down, celiacs.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We are playing this week with Paula Poundstone, Roxanne Roberts, and Adam Felber. And here again is your host at Wolf Trap in Vienna, Virginia, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you all so much. Right now, of course, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, everybody. This is Lauren Gibson, and I'm calling from Cleveland, Ohio.
Beautiful Cleveland.
Right.
Cleveland by the lake. So what do you do there in Cleveland?
I am a defender of the capital market.
A defender of the capital markets?
Yes, indeed. I am an auditor with a Big Four financial services firm.
Oh, that's much less interesting sounding than a defender of the capital markets.
Well, that's why she said it.
I know. I think you should go with that next time anybody asks. Well, welcome to the show, Lauren. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is Lauren's topic?
This sucks slightly less than we thought.
There are things that everybody hates. Mosquitoes, taxes, Gwyneth Paltrow. But once in a while, the reviled get redeemed. This week, we read a story about a universally hated thing actually doing somebody some good. Our panelists are going to tell you about it. All you have to do is pick the one telling the truth. You will win our prize, the voice of the immortal Carl Castle on your voicemail. Are you ready to play?
Oh, absolutely. Born ready.
Born ready, she says. Here is your first story. It is from Adam Felber.
It appears before us, perfectly round, both beautiful and horrifying and omnipresent, and we literally cannot look away as it drives us utterly mad. No, I'm not rehashing the plot of The Ring. I am talking about a real-world terror, Kim Kardashian's butt. But we saw a different side of that butt this week, a heroic side, as she was golfing with her husband Kanye in Indian Wells, California. Near the 13th green, her caddy, Brian Nova, misjudged a hill, tipping over the golf cart. Miss Kardashian, on the near side, tumbled gently onto the grass, but Nova, on the upward side of the cart, fell headfirst 5 feet and might have broken his neck had he not landed safely on the supple crash mat of the celebutante's famously generous buttocks. Embarrassed but relieved, Mr. Nova, previously not a posterior fan, had high praise for the low parts. Quote, I never saw that as an asset before. But now that this bum's seated back behind the wheel, I fundamentally thank her from the bottom of my heart.
Kim Kardashian's butt saving golf caddy Brian Nova from certain death simply by cushioning his fall. Your next story of something once hated being redeemed comes from Roxanne Roberts.
Shelley Barcroft was already in a foul mood when she settled into a middle seat on a red eye from Los Angeles to Boston last week. The gate agent made her check her carry-on because it was 1 inch too big. The flight was delayed for 2 hours, and since it was a night flight, there was no food or beverage service. And she was squished between two huge guys who promptly fell asleep and started snoring. Just when she thought things couldn't get any worse, Barcroft started choking on a Werther's caramel drop. With the cabin lights down, no one noticed she couldn't breathe. It was then, like a miracle from airline hell, that the jerk directly in front of her did what jerks always do, aggressively reclined his seat. The sudden jolt slammed the table tray into her rib cage in a one-in-a-million Heimlich-like maneuver, and the caramel popped out. Quote, it was the best terrible flight I've ever had, Barcroft told the Boston Globe, but it was still pretty terrible.
A woman saved from death at the hands of a Werther's candy by a reclining airline seat. Your last story of something that's maybe not as terrible as we thought, at least in this one instance, comes from Paula Poundstone.
Selfie sticks have a bad reputation. Even people who own selfie sticks hate other people using selfie sticks. It may be something in the name. They seem, by nature, selfie-ish. They're banned from many museums, and privately and off the record, curators might admit that it's just a ploy to keep stupid people out. For 16-year-old Ellen Johns, vacationing with her family in Nantucket, though, this week a selfie stick became a hero when she and her father took to the water where they were caught in a nearly lethal riptide. Horrified, Aaron's mother, Jennifer, attempted to save them and also got caught in the riptide. Her father, John, a former Marine, said it was the biggest pickle he'd ever been in. Just when they thought all was lost, John was able to grab the selfie stick, still attached to Aaron's wrist, with the GoPro, which continued to film, and pull her to relative safety. Fortunately, the lifeguards completed the rescue, and even more fortunately, each of the Johns can show a film of their family almost dying to anyone they can corner with their iPhone.
All right. One of these things, which normally people dislike, actually helped save a life in the news. Was it, from Adam Felber, Kim Kardashian's butt, which cushioned the fall of a golf caddy? Was it from Roxanne Roberts, a reclining airline seat, which suddenly Heimlicked a woman silently choking to death? Or from Paula Poundstone, a selfie stick, which proved out to be the lifeline needed to save a family at peril in the sea? All right, which of those is the real story?
I feel like I would have heard about it if someone fell and landed on Kim Kardashian's butt. So that, in addition to the rampant applause from your audience, is going to have me go for number three, Paula's story.
Oh, I see. Okay, your choice is Paula's story. Well, to find out the correct answer, we spoke to someone familiar with the truth.
The benefits of a selfie stick, we've learned you can get a great picture, and you can also be saved from a riptide.
That was Stephanie McLean. She's a reporter for BuzzFeed, of course, talking about the life saving selfie stick, which helped save the life of a family in Nantucket. You were right. Your logic was impeccable, Lauren.
Thank you so much.
You're exactly correct. You've earned a point for Paula for telling the truth so convincingly, and you've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting in your voicemail. Well done, Lauren. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. And now the game where we ask important people about unimportant things. It's called Not My Job. When this country was founded centuries ago, our surgeons were aimless, wandering here and there with no discipline or order. Then the country created the Office of Surgeon General, the commander of all surgeons everywhere. He makes sure their surgical scrubs have sharp creases and their scalpels shine like the sun. Vivek Murthy is the youngest Surgeon General in our nation's history. He is right here in uniform, and we welcome him to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Dr. Murthy, pleasure to see you here.
Thank you, Peter.
So, first of all, this is true. You are the youngest Surgeon General?
So, actually, I'm not.
No, you're not.
I'm not. It's a common misconception. But, in fact, the very first Surgeon General, John Woodworth, was younger than I was.
He was
in
five.
His early 30s.
He was in his early 30s. And how old are you, sir?
I just turned 38 a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, that's exciting. Happy birthday. Birthday.
Thank you.
And when you turn 40, will they give you the uniform with the long pants? Not that that's not an adorable look for you, sir. You're a doctor. You're in Boston doing important work. How did you find out they wanted you to be Surgeon General?
Well, I was called by a representative from the White House, and I was actually picking up my dry cleaning, believe it or not, and my phone rang, and I didn't recognize the number, and actually was not planning to pick it up, and the last minute I just said, hey, what the heck, and picked it up, and I'm glad I did.
Really?
Well,
do you think that if they didn't, they would have just gone on to the next guy on the list?
If you hadn't picked it up, Dr. Phil would be the so thank you, sir. I'm very grateful. Were you concerned that your extreme youth would keep you from being able to grow the required Everett Koop-style beard? Because I notice it hasn't come in quite well yet.
Well, I will tell you, being Indian American, I have tremendous potential to grow facial hair.
Oh, that's true. You have that club in your bag. Speaking as a Jew, you and me both, brother.
Speaking as an aging woman.
I think
there's no shame in being human.
So, what does the Surgeon General do other than put warning labels on things?
You know, I'm so glad you asked.
I'm glad you're here to answer.
Because, you know, a lot of people have misconceptions about what the Surgeon General does. The other day, I was, in fact, getting on an airplane, and the woman in front of me turned around, looked at me, and said, oh, no, why don't you go first, sir? And I said, you know, it's all right. You know, I don't mind waiting. And she said, no, without you, we won't be able to fly the plane.
I should point out that you are wearing a military-style uniform, which could easily be misconstrued as an airline pilot's uniform.
Now Fair I'm enough. Wondering if the last time I went to my doctor... he might have been a pilot.
Yeah. Now, so but you're not an airline pilot. What does the Surgeon General do, sir?
So the Surgeon General is responsible for sharing scientifically based information with the public so that they can improve their health. But I will say personally that my goal as Surgeon General is to help build a culture of prevention in America so that we are a nation that is as good,
right,
as good at preventing illness,
right,
as we are at treating it.
Yeah, baby.
So you want America to live more healthy. You want them not to go swimming until an hour after they eat, for example. You're like the nation's Jewish mother. Well, we all know you're not supposed to smoke, and we're supposed to exercise, and we're not supposed to sit around all day. We're not supposed to eat too many fats, and so on and so forth. But what's the next thing that we really love doing that we're going to have to stop doing? Tell us now so we can enjoy it a last few times before you come out with the announcement.
Well, you mentioned a few things that are important, which are making sure that we are eating healthily. Mm-hmm. That includes making sure you're eating a lot of fruits and vegetables in particular, drinking a lot of water. But there's actually one other thing which I think is really important. This is actually being happy. And let me explain why. Most people think that you need to be healthy in order to be happy.
But right.
I actually think a lot of times it's the other way around. You know, we know that there are things that all of us know we can do in our life to improve our happiness. For example, whether it's spending time with friends, improving social connectedness, whether it's making sure that we are exercising, and which actually can give you energy and improve your emotional and mental function.
What if what really makes you happy is sitting around smoking, eating cheeseburgers, and watching a lot of Netflix? Because if you tried it, it is pretty awesome.
He doesn't look like he's tried.
What's your weakness? What is the one thing that you know you should do more
yes,
of?
Yes, the one thing that people would be shocked and horrified to know that the Surgeon General does.
Okay.
If you could mention that now.
We will not tell anybody.
Okay.
So my weakness is sweets. I like bread pudding and cheesecake in particular. So I have to be careful when I'm around sweets.
Right. Well, you are the Surgeon General. You have authority. If you wanted to, you could say, don't eat sweets, cheesecake accepted. Since you're here, top-ranking medical officer in the United States, I have some medical questions for you. First of all...
Are you going to show me a rash?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Wait!
How about the five-second rule? You know, you drop something on the floor...
It's 3 seconds.
No, it's five.
Well, hold on. We can find out.
Yeah.
Drop something on the floor. I thought it was the five-second rule, that you have 5 seconds to pit it up, and you put it back in your mouth. Or is it 3 seconds? Or is it 5 seconds?
Or does it depend on the food's viscosity?
It depends if it's the first or second child.
Exactly. This is true. Well, Dr. Murphy, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Surgeon General meet General Hospital.
You've had a varied career as a physician, but you never worked at General Hospital, the setting of the long-running ABC soap opera, which mysteriously treated 5,000% more cases of amnesia than the national average. We're going to ask you 3 questions about General Hospital. If you get 2 right, you win our prize, one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice on their voicemail. Bill, who is the Surgeon General of these United States playing for?
Jeffrey Last of Washington, D.C.
All right. Soap opera actors have to deal with a grueling 5-day-a-week shooting schedule. General Hospital star Jack Wagner once proved himself a true professional when he did what? Was it A, during a love scene, rather than stopping, getting out of bed, finding a bathroom to go pee, he just grabbed a champagne bottle off the nightstand, pulled it under the covers, and relieved himself in it right there. B, Mr. Wagner is the only actor to ever successfully pull off the soap opera trifecta. In one 90-second scene, he got amnesia, revealed himself to be his own evil twin, and went into a coma. Or C, when struck with acute appendicitis, he filmed a scene for General Hospital from his room at Massachusetts General Hospital.
Wow. I'm going to go with C.
You're going to go with C?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. It was actually A, the champagne bottle. When you got to go, apparently, you... have to go. Next question. When one actress learned she was going to be fired from General Hospital, she did not take it lying down. Oh, no. Instead, she did what? A, she ad-libbed her final line, took off her shirt, flashed the camera, said, F you, and walked off the set. B, without realizing what had just happened, she took a swig from Jack Wagner's bottle of champagne. Or C, not liking that... the producers killed her off. In her funeral scene, she sat up in her casket and waved at the mourners.
I'm going to go with A.
Yes, it was A. Very good. The story comes from an actress on General Hospital who says, quote, stuff like that happened all the time. I think every door in the building was broken from someone slamming it. All right, here's your last question. General Hospital's biggest storyline, of course, was the famous relationship of Luke and Laura.
Sure.
Right? Most famous... relationship in all of soap opera. Those two star-crossed lovers, Luke and Laura, fell in love while they were doing what? Was it A, hanging around flash dancing and wearing leg warmers, as one did in the early 80s? B, saving the world from a mad tycoon determined to freeze civilization with, quote, carbonic snow? Or C, simultaneously romancing Tracy Unterman, who General Hospital doctors called, quote, the world's only left-right divided hermaphrodite?
Oh, my God. Okay, I'm going to take a wild guess here and go with B.
You're going to go with B, the carbonic snow? Okay. You're right! Woo!
Oh, thank you.
Bill, how did the Surgeon General do in our quiz?
Dr. Murphy's a winner, 2 out of 3.
Vivek Murthy is the Surgeon General of the United States. Dr. Murthy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
what
you
a pleasure.
For
what an honor. Dr. Vivek Murthy, your Surgeon General. Quick shout out to one of our sponsors, Casper, an adorable ghost of a young boy who No, I'm corrected. It is in fact an online retailer for mattresses. Casper mattresses are American made and obsessively engineered for comfort. They use two technologies, latex foam and memory foam, to give you just the right amount of sink and bounce. And they have a risk-free trial. You can try out your Casper mattress for 100 days with free delivery and returns. It's outrageous comfort at a polite price. So go to casper.com/waitwait to check out their options. And they have a special offer for you listeners of this podcast. Use that promo code waitwait. That's waitwait to redeem $50 towards a Casper mattress for you. Terms and conditions apply, but don't they always?
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We are playing this week with Adam Felber, Paula Poundstone, and Roxanne Roberts. And here again is your host at Wolf Trap in Vienna, Virginia, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. In just a minute, Bill heads out on the Rhymalachian Trail to hunt for limericks.
Wow.
It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Paula, a new company, this is great, a new company has finally solved one of the worst aspects of owning a cat. They're selling a brand new product that does what?
Decorate your cat's butt.
That's exactly right. Paula, and I know this is something of an overgeneralization, but you don't know anything, and you knew that. That's both impressive and shocking.
Every cat owner, Peter.
Yes, Paula.
Has to make that decision.
What decision?
What to do about that one part of your cat that's not cute.
Well, here's the solution. As we say, cats are constantly walking around with their tails in the air, putting their butts in your face. Enter Twinkle Tush. A new product that claims to solve the problem by bedazzling your cat's backside. Don't get alarmed. What it is it's basically a little flat Christmas ornament type thing that is on a loop that you put over your cat's tail and turns what was once unsightly into a work of one-of-a-kind art.
I hope at least one of them is just a little evergreen.
You know, that's a great idea. We in the Poundstone home have been doing something similar to this in a lot less expensive way for many years, which is I just snatch the do not disturb sign from any hotel I'm in.
And just hang it right there off the tail.
Hang it right over the cat's tail.
That would work.
How drunk would you have to be to sit around and come up with that?
How drunk would you think you are if you're at a friend's house and you see one of these walk by? I just hit bottom. Yeah. That cat's butt was twinkling. All right, Adam, it is time for a new game we're calling...
I've got good news and bad news.
We tell you the good news, you tell us the bad news.
Excellent.
You ready?
Sure.
All right. The good news is there is a new, very promising treatment for enlarged prostates. What is the bad news?
It shrinks all the surrounding bits.
Once you had an enlarged prostate, now you are a very tiny man. I'll give you a hint, it's the buzz in all the medical journals.
You have to get stung by bees.
Well, it is bee venom. We'll give
bee
it
venom.
To you.
Okay.
Bees.
Right.
It just so happens the last place you want a bee to sting you is the place that might actually do you some good.
Wow.
Bee venom has suppressed enlarged prostates in tests. In a corollary finding, 9 out of 10 men who stopped to think about what this means involuntarily crossed their legs.
Yeah, I just did.
But if you think being stung by a bee 8 inches up your colon sounds like the worst thing ever, think how the bee feels about it. Coming Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, which is waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows at the Chase Bank Auditorium back in Chicago. And be sure to check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian are back to reveal the dark secret of the Queen's Royal Footman. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. It's Beverly calling.
Hey, Beverly. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Where are you calling from, Beverly?
I'm calling from Windham, New Hampshire.
Windham?
Yes. Hi, folks.
What are you doing there in Windham?
Well, I work for the New Hampshire Union Leader. I sell advertising for them.
Oh, yeah, the New Hampshire Union Leader is very important every 4 years. They're a political paper. They often do endorsements.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Have you run into any presidential candidates there in
I have. Line? I have so many. I've met Donald twice.
You have?
Yes.
Well, let me tell you something. I mean, I don't know if you spent much time with him, but tell us something nice about him.
He is so charming. Everybody loved him. He was so nice and spent all kinds of time with us.
Donald, is that you?
Wait a minute. I gotta fix my hair.
Well, Beverly, welcome to the show. Of course, it's time for the Listener Limerick Challenge. That means that Bill Curtis is going to read for you three news-related limericks, but he's going to stop before it's over. Your job, finish those limericks. Do that 2 times out of 3. You'll win our prize. That is Carol Castle's voice. Are you ready to do this?
I am.
Let's do it.
What's worse than my parents romancing? When Dad thinks his moves are entrancing. He thinks he's got game, but I'm dying of shame. I hate it when Daddy starts...
dancing?
Right!
Yes. Yay, I got
good
one!
Good girl.
There are so many things dads do to ruin the lives of their kids, such as just standing there, breathing. But according to a study out this week, dancing is the worst thing a dad can do from the kid's perspective. Researchers found that most adults feel 20% younger than they really are, which gives them the terrifying courage to do things they shouldn't, like wear skinny jeans or grind up on your mom at your own bar mitzvah. Oh. All right, here is your next limerick.
For dinosaurs, we have a fat wish. But Nessie's been served on a flat dish. She's not a big leader, but a great bottom feeder. The monster is just a big...
fat fish?
Not quite fat fish, but something that rhymes with fat fish.
And is a bottom feeder.
Bottom feeder.
Flat. Sorry, I...
It's okay, it's catfish.
Catfish. Oh.
24 years ago, a man named Steve Feltham gave up his job, his home, his girlfriend... to devote all his time to finding Nessie, the Loch Ness Monster. This week, he announced his findings. He says that Nessie never really existed. It was most likely just a very large catfish. He says that he does not regret wasting half his life on something that never panned out. Now that he's solved that mystery, he plans to spend the next 2 decades planning Donald Trump's inaugural ball. All right, now you still have a chance to win this whole thing. Let's hear your final limerick.
Some bachelorettes drink like guppies and paw at the male stripper's cuppies. But I would prefer a wet nose and soft fur, and give me a room full of
puppies.
Puppies it is.
Puppies. Puppies. According to the Wall Street Journal, the daily diary of America's very strange dream, puppy parties are the classy alternative to strippers at today's bachelorette parties. You rent a bundle of 10 puppies and get a cuteness explosion instead of a gyrating guy in a G-string. Of course, if you want a wilder night, you combine the two concepts, you get 10 puppy strippers that wear little doggy police outfits. They pretend to arrest you. But don't worry about the puppies. They're doing this by choice. It's how they're going to pay their way through obedience school. Bill, how did Beverly do on our quiz?
Well, she got 2 out of 3 for the New Hampshire leader. So you're a winner, Beverly.
Well done.
Yay, thank you.
Thank you so much, and thanks for being on our show.
All right, thank you.
Bye, Beverly.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Bill, can you give us the scores?
Paula has 4. Adam and Roxy each has 2.
Wow.
Don't say it like that.
We have flipped a coin. Roxanne has elected to go second. That means, Adam, you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. After 50 years, the U.S. resumed diplomatic relations with blank on Monday.
Cuba.
Yes. This week, Garrison Keillor announced he was retiring as the host of blank.
That show with the Lake Wobegon, the Tales from the Thing, that show he does, Garrison Keillor.
I'm just going to let you dangle for a while.
Let me dangle for a while. I can't believe I'm blanking on this.
Five million people are screaming the name at their radios
they're all
right
now. But Prairie Home Companion.
Yes, Prairie Home Companion. According to a new poll from Reuters, blank would easily defeat Oprah, George Clooney, and Bill Clinton for the Democratic nomination.
Hillary Clinton.
Yes. A Japanese newspaper company announced Thursday that they were acquiring blank for $1.3 billion.
The Financial Times.
Yes, exactly right. A Canadian man who had as good a chance of being struck by lightning as he did of winning the lottery ended up blanking.
Being struck by lightning and winning the lottery.
That's exactly what he did. This week, professional surfer Mick Fanning fought a blank and won during a competition in South Africa.
Shark.
Yes, the announcement of the MTV Music Video Award nominees on Monday led to a Twitter feud between Nicki Minaj and blank.
It's Taylor Swift and the other one, the Katy Perry.
Taylor Swift is what we were looking for, okay. And she's apologized, so calm down.
Okay.
British Prime Minister David Cameron this week announced that under no circumstances would he blank this summer.
Punch a shark.
Close. Pointed fish.
Oh.
He said he would no longer point at fish. Every year...
Punching a shark a form of pointing at fish?
Possibly, but...
Bill Curtis?
Actually, yeah, he made contact, and that's very good.
Well, let me explain what we're talking about, and then, Bill, we can get your judgment. Okay. So every year on summer holiday, British Prime Minister David Cameron and his family do a photo op for British journalists, and every year journalists have chosen to photograph the Prime Minister at these classical British open-air markets pointing at fish. Oh, look at that fish. Oh, look at that fish. But this year, Cameron told reporters he is putting an end to the embarrassing tradition and instead wants to be photographed kissing the fish right in the lips. So, Bill, do you think that should count, that punching a shark is sufficient?
I do.
The title is Judge and Scorekeeper. So then, given his brilliant and apparently correct answer in the last one, how well did Adam do?
He set the bar high. He got 8 right, 16 more points, a total of 18, and the lead.
That check is in the mail, Bill.
Roxanne, you're up next. Fill in the blank. On Monday, the UN Security Council unanimously approved the blank deal.
The Greek bailout?
No, the Iran nuclear deal.
Oh, that one.
This week, lawmakers in blank passed reforms that were part of the EU's bailout package.
Greek bailout.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. This week, the Department of Labor announced that U.S. blank claims have dropped to a 40-year low.
Unemployment.
Right. A FIFA official charged with accepting bribes, including gold watches, diamond jewelry, and luxury automobiles, paid his $10 million bail this week with blank.
Bitcoin.
No, gold watches, diamond jewelry, and luxury automobiles. On Monday, golfer Zach Johnson won the blank with a record low score
of...
Yes. Officials at NASA reported this week that the Kepler telescope discovered a planet that resembles blank.
A little tiny Earth cousin.
Yes, they're calling it Earth 2.0. A New Jersey man was arrested for breaking into a home, hiding under a bed, and blanking.
Charging 4 cell phones.
That's exactly right, Roxanne. Apparently, you do know how desperate people get when their phone's battery is low. Jason Hubbard needed to charge his 4 phones fast. We broke into a house and hid under a bed for 3 days. He was able to charge 4 phones before the owner figured out he was there and threatened to kick him out unless he ordered another coffee drink. Bill, how did Roxanne do in our quiz?
Roxy set a record low.
Oh, thanks.
Five right, 10 more points, 12 for the total. Adam is in the lead with 18.
Okay, so Paula is starting from a better position, but still, she may need a lot to win. How many does she need?
7 to tie, 8 to win.
No problem, Paula. Here we go. They're on your side. Fill in the blank. On Monday, Ohio Governor John Kasich announced that he was blanking.
Running for president?
Yes, GOP nomination. This week, a federal appeals court overturned 5 of the corruption convictions against former Illinois Governor Blank.
Oh.
This is a languorous round.
Okay, I can't remember his name.
Say something.
John Glenn.
No, it's Rod Blagojevich. According to an internal memo released this week, McDonald's will soon be offering blank nationwide.
Well, I knew that they were going to offer breakfast.
Yeah, that's it, breakfast.
Yeah.
A marijuana dispensary in California is suing the police, saying the cops raided the dispensary and blanked.
Smoked the marijuana.
No, they ate all the pot brownies. Best known for the books Ragtime and The March, author blank passed away this week at the age of 84.
Yale Doctorow.
Right. A woman looking up her house on Google Street View was shocked when she found blank.
Herself naked on the roof.
No, an image of her husband smoking in the driveway after he promised her he had quit.
Oh.
Hey, look, it's our house, it's our car, and it's the lying SOB I'm married to. Bill, did Paula do well enough to win?
I think I did.
Well, you got all of three right.
Yeah.
You got six.
Oh, you know what? I forgot my answer. Punch a fish.
Oh, yeah. we would have given you that one.
That would have changed the outcome.
Yeah. Total of 10. Let's not take the glory away from Adam, who had 18 points and wins.
Congratulations.
Adam, punch a fish, Felber.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict a line from the next Lost and Found Dr. Seuss book to be published. Support for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and, of course, the following old-timey radio sponsorship message comes from Blue Apron. That's the new service that delivers all the ingredients you need to make incredible meals at home. Farm-fresh ingredients are perfectly portioned and come with an easy-to-follow recipe card so you can create a delicious meal in 35 minutes or less. You can cook meals like Vietnamese chicken wings with lemongrass jasmine rice and other tasty stuff. Discover a better way to cook. Visit blueapron.com/wait to get your first two meals free. That's blueapron.com/wait. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Mr. Doug Berman, benevolent overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our intern is Jesse Batend of the world as we know it, and I feel fine. Our web guru is the extraordinary Beth Novi. Special thanks to the crew here at Wolf Trap. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Miles Dernbos. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our CFO is Andy Ann. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will be a line from the next Dr. Seuss book? Roxanne Roberts.
From the upcoming Why Mommy Drinks. Barking dogs and broken toys, you try raising seven boys. Diapers, dirt, and little weenies, mommy needs her dried martinis.
Paula Poundstone.
Who publishes for me in my current situation is a best-kept secret in our nation. It's only told on a need-to-know basis, same as Harper Lee's work since Atticus became a racist.
And Adam Felber.
He huffed and he posed and he stomped at the stump. He puffed out his chest and he stuck out his rump. But we told him he'd lost and he felt like a chump, and that was the last that we heard about President Trump.
Well, if we read any of that, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. Thanks also to Adam Felber, Roxanne Roberts, Paula Poundstone. Special thanks to Heidi Kibersky and Sarah Beasley at Wolf Trap, and our fabulous audience here at the beautiful Wolf Trap National Park. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week, Millennium Park, Chicago. Be there. This is NPR.